The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first story today is How the Camel Got His Hump, and it is by Rudyard Kipling from a book called Just So Stories. So here we go. Long ago, when the world had just begun, Camel didn't have a hump on his back as he does today. Instead, he looked like this. And here it shows a camel with the camel head and the camel-looking legs, but his back is flat, almost like a donkey. This is the story, dearest reader, of how he came to have a hump. Some camels have two humps, but today, this story is about the kind of camel that has only one hump. When the world was so new and all, there was lots of work to do. People were always busy hammering and chopping and fetching and carrying. Horse, dog, and ox helped. But Camel was as lazy as the day was long. He didn't work. He just stood around chomping on leaves and enjoying the sunshine. Not only that, but he was grumpy, too. "Please, can you help me fetch the sticks?" dog asked Camel. "Humph!" Camel snorted rudely and carried right on eating. Poor doggy didn't get any help, did he? "Please, can you help me bring some branches?" asked the horse. Camel snorted again and said, "Humph!" And then he stopped there with his nose in the air until horse gave up and trudged away. "Will you please help me pull this heavy cart?" asked the ox. "It would be so much easier with the two of us." Camel shook his head. "Humph!" was his only reply. The animals went to complain to man. "It's not fair," they moaned. "Camel won't help." Man shrugged. "If camel won't help, you three will just have to work harder." The animals looked at Camel, lazing around, doing nothing, and they felt really, really cross. Just then, a desert storm blew up. Out of the whirling, swirling stand came a magic genie. The animals rushed up to him, hoping he could help. "Camel does nothing but eat and sleep while we do all the work," they told him. "We wish he'd change." "Your wish is my command," said the genie, as he bowed his head. So the genie went to find Camel. "What's this I hear about you not working?" he asked. Can you guess what Camel replied? "Humph! The others have to work harder because you're so lazy," the genie added. "Humph!" the camel said again. "Now don't say that too often or you might regret it," the genie warned. "This is your last chance, Camel. Will you do some work?" "Humph!" said the camel and carried right on, munching those leaves off the tree. The genie waved his arms. There was a zap, whoosh, and a flash, and a big, hairy hump sprouted on Camel's back. "What's that?" he gasped. "Your humph," the genie chuckled. "It will help you work." "How can that thing help me?" asked Camel. "It was so ugly." Genie laughed. "Your humph stores food, so you won't have to eat so often. So you can catch up on your work while everyone else stops for lunch." Uh-oh, genie had made the camel now have to help with the work. Now, ever since that day, Camel has worked very hard. He still has his hump on his back, although nowadays people call it a hump so as not to hurt his feelings. But he is as grumpy and bad-mannered as ever, and he still says, "Humph!" How the camel got his back hump is from the book Just So Stories, Just So Stories by Rudyard Kipling, which tells the stories of how animals came to be the way they are. So that's the end of How the Camel Got His Hump. Now, our next story today is Pinkalicious and the Sick Day. And the front page shows Pinkalicious in the bed with a thermometer in her mouth and her teddy bear under her arm and lots of Kleenexes where she's been blowing her nose. And there she sits looking really sad. So here we go with Pinkalicious and the Sick Day. And this story is by Victoria Kahn. When the bell rang at the end of the day, Principal Hart handed me a letter. "Give this to your mom," she said. Uh-oh, was I in trouble? When I got home, I found Mommy. I waited while she read the letter. Mommy smiled. "You have perfect attendance. Tomorrow you get to be the principal for the day," she said. "I am very proud of you." "Yippee," I yelled. "I'm in charge. No homework." "Well, I don't know about that," Mommy said. "However, you do get to read the morning announcements and eat lunch with Principal Hart." After dinner, I worked on my announcer's voice. "Good morning, students," I said. "Bravo, Pinkalicious," Daddy said. "You must be very excited. Your cheeks are all pink." Well, I nodded. I was so excited, but I was also very sleepy, so I went to bed early. And there she is yawning with her teddy bear under her arm, and she's in bed already. When I woke up in the morning, my head hurt, my eyes itched, my throat felt all scratchy. Achoo! 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 3 sneezes in a row. Daddy took my temperature. "You have a fever," he said. "No school for you today," and he tucked me back into bed. Then I remembered. "I have to go to school," I said. "I'm principal for the day." "I'm sorry, Pinkalicious," Mommy said. "I will make you some tea," said Mommy. Daddy tried to cheer me up. He put my favorite books on my bed, and he gave me a big hug, and then I went right back to sleep. I woke up feeling a bit better, but I still had the sniffles. I looked in the mirror. My nose was now perfectly pink, and that was from all her nose blowing. Mommy came in with the pink tea. "My mom used to make this for me when I was sick," she said. "It's elderberry tea." I took a sip. Yum! I got to stay in my pajamas all day. Mommy brought me crayons, and I colored in bed. I drew a picture of me riding Goldie the horse to school. Daddy called from work to see how I was. He told me a joke to make me laugh. "Why did the pink panda go to the doctor's office?" "Because she was pink." I giggled, but I was still a little sad because I wasn't at school. I would not be able to share that joke at recess. In the afternoon, the phone rang. It was Principal Hart. "I'm homesick too," she said. When you come back, you can still be principal for the day." I felt a pink a million times better. And then Peter came home. "Guess what I did?" I said. "I colored and I read books, and Mommy made me pink tea, and I didn't even have to get dressed." Peter looked sort of mad that he didn't get to do that. "I want to be sick too," said Peter. And then he smelled my cold medicine. "Yuck, forget it," he said, and I giggled. The next morning, my nose was a normal color, and I felt all better. "Your temperature is normal," Mommy said. "You can go to school today." "Yay," I cheered. When I got to school, I went straight to the office. I couldn't wait to tell everyone the joke about the pink panda. "Good morning," I said. "This is Principal Pinkalicious." And that's the end of that book. This book is called Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast by Josh Funk. Deep in the fridge and behind the green peas way past the tofu and left of the cheese. Up in the corner and back by a roast sat Lady Pancake beside Sir French Toast. The leftover friends were as close as could be until they heard news from their neighbor, Miss Brie. That's Brie cheese, by the way. The syrup is almost completely gone. A single drop's left. Just a drop, she went on. The last drop is mine, Lady Pancake conversed. But French Toast replied, not if I get there first. Like that, he was off, and the race had begun, with Pancake behind, breaking into a run. Through the broccoli forest, past the orange juice fountain, they climbed to the top of Potato Mash Mountain. Pushing and shoving, they fought for the lead, Toast behind Pancake, who rolled at high speed. She screeched to a stop at the edge of the shelf, clutching a grapevine to steady herself. Toast didn't notice and couldn't quite stop, plummeting down into jam with a plop. Uh-oh. He scraped himself off and yelled up, "You're a meanie," as Pancake rappelled down a rope of linguine. She bragged, "I'm the best of all breakfast food treats," then hurdled a lime and skipped over two beets. And Pancake made you... Oops, excuse me. "I am," thought Toast, but his chances looked bleak, so Toast took a shortcut down to Sauerkraut Peak. Skiing past spinach and artichoke dip, Toast vaulted high in the air with a flip. Nearing the edge, he tried one final jump and stumbled and fell way below with a thump. Pancake made use of her seafaring skills and sailed across oceans of soup, causing spills. But chilly lagoons slathered Pancake in muck, and then at a fork in the road, she got stuck. "Don't go that way," yelled a chickpea to warn her, but Pancake sped on and got trapped in a corner. Uh-oh, caught behind the dressings, one Russian, one ranch. She squeezed out and started a bean avalanche, and there are all the beans pouring out, and Pancake has started a bean avalanche, and they're all falling down the shelf and on, trying to slow her down. Searching for safety from raining legumes, Toast turned to hide, but was blasted by fumes of Brussels sprouts left from an old party platter. So Toast climbed up a celery ladder. Toast reemerged in the vegetable crisper, sticking up swiftly, not making a whisper. Beans were now falling from such a great height, some kidney, some lima, some pinto, some white, and the beans are now filling up the fridge. What a mess! Beside him, a leather-leaf parachute landed. Pancake slipped out. "It is mine," she demanded. Battered and soggy, exhausted and crumbling, too tired to push, they were limping and stumbling. Sorry, that was a tricky word, stumbling. There stood a bottle of syrup at last. But wait, it was empty. They stood quite aghast. Licking his lips with a sneer that was awful, out of the shadows crept Baron von Waffle. "Uh-oh. I got here first while you boasted and bickered. My, that syrup was delicious," he snickered. He ate the last drop of syrup, that Baron Waffle. With one evil laugh, Waffle slipped out of sight. The syrup was gone. No more reason to fight. Trudging back home beneath layers of grime, Toast said, "Perhaps we should not fight next time." "Agreed," replied Pancake. "As friends, we should share. Hey, look! We can split up that butter right there." And this picture shows the French Toast and Pancake sitting there with big lumps of butter and enjoying the taste. The end of that book. That was sort of cute, wasn't it? Our next story is Milo's Hat Trick by John Agee. He was called Milo the Magnificent, but Milo wasn't magnificent at all. He botched his card trick, he tangled his rope trick, and his hat trick was just pathetic. He was a magician, or sort of a magician. Mr. Popovich, the theater manager, was furious. "Milo," he barked, "I'll give you one more chance. Tomorrow night, you better pull a rabbit out of your hat, or else." So the next morning, Milo went out to catch a rabbit. Instead, he caught a bear. "What are you doing out here?" said the bear. I was looking for a rabbit for my hat trick." "Hat trick," said the bear. "Maybe I can help." "You," said Milo, "watch this." And he jumped into Milo's hat. "Wow," said Milo, "how did you do that?" "Easy," said the bear. "You just pretend your bones are made of rubber. It's a secret I learned from a rabbit." "Well, you can definitely help me out," Milo said, "but you'll have to hide my hat until we're on stage." "No problem," said the bear. "Just whistle and I'll pop out." That bear just disappeared right into that hat. On the train back to the city, Milo was in a daze. "It's true," he thought. "I really do have a bear in my hat." But when he got to his dressing room, his hat was empty. Worse still, it wasn't even his hat. Uh-oh. Now that messed things up, didn't it? Milo raced back to the train station. There were lots of people with hats, but none of the hats was his. Meanwhile, in a restaurant across town, someone whistled for a waiter. Ta-da! And right on cue, the bear popped out. But there was no applause. There was no Milo. Uh-oh, said the bear. He grabbed Milo's hat and he ran. And there are all the people running from the restaurant, too. "Help," cried a cab driver. "A wild bear is on the loose." "A bear? Where?" said a policeman. "He was standing right there by that mailbox. And then, poof, he disappeared." And they couldn't find that bear anywhere. "My gosh," said the bear, "how in the world will I ever find that magician?" Just then, a school teacher was passing the mailbox. "Hurry up, children," she said, "or we'll be late for that magic show." "Magic show?" thought the bear. He slipped out of the mail slot and quickly joined the line. But all you could see of the bear was a hat walking down the street on little tiny bear feet. That means bear as in the bear in the forest kind of feet, not just naked feet. But anyways, it's really a funny picture. Minutes before the matinee, Milo slouched into the theater. "It's no use, Mr. Popovich. I didn't find a rabbit." "Rabbit or no rabbit, you've got to go on," Mr. Popovich said. "Just look, the house is packed." Milo looked. A very familiar hat was sitting in the front row. "My hat. Would you please hand me my hat?" asked Milo to the person who was sitting in right next to it. Milo whistled, and out popped the bear. "Boy," said the bear, "I'm glad to see you." For the rest of the afternoon, the bear jumped in and out of hats of all shapes and all sizes. Milo's new act was a smash. Mr. Popovich was ecstatic. For 3 solid weeks, Milo and the bear were the hottest ticket in town. But one day, during intermission, the bear yawned an enormous yawn. After popping in and out of 762 hats, he was pooped. Back in his cave. So Milo took the bear home. And in the paper the next day, bear quits the show. And Milo's looking very sad, and he's taking the bear home in a train. Back in his cave, the bear settled down for a long nap. "Gee," said Milo, "what am I going to do without you?" The bear yawned. just like I said before, you just... And then he fell asleep. These days, Milo closes his show with a hat trick. And this one is really special. What do you think happens? It's a secret he learned from the bear. And it shows Milo jumping into his hat and disappearing. And that, I bet, makes the audience really excited to see Milo disappear into his hat. And that's the end of that book. Our next story is about another bear, Corduroy, a stuffed bear that some of you might have heard other Corduroy stories before about Corduroy and the bear, and he belongs to a little girl called Lisa, and Lisa loves Corduroy. It was just starting to snow when Lisa and her mother got off the bus in front of the theater. Lisa held Corduroy tight as they walked up the steps. She had never been to a big theater like this before. Neither had Corduroy. They had come to see a performance of Mother Goose Rhymes. In the lobby, people were picking up their tickets. Ushers handed out programs. A brass chandelier hung from the ceiling that was painted with clouds. Suddenly the lights flickered off and on. "That means the play will start in a few minutes. We should find our seats," said Lisa's mother. Lisa held her mother's hand a little bit tighter and held Corduroy a little bit closer. The usher took their tickets and showed them where to sit. "These seats are so soft," said Lisa. She put Corduroy on her lap and looked through the program. Before the play started, a very tall man sat down in front of Lisa. "Mommy," Lisa whispered to her mother, "I can't see." "Here, dear," said her mother, "we can fold our coats together, and you can sit on top of them." When Lisa stood up to sit on the coats, the orchestra started to play. She forgot all about Corduroy. He slipped off her lap and fell underneath the seats in front of them. "Now I can't see anything," said Corduroy. "Maybe if I got closer to the music, I could see the stage." He peeked down the aisle and saw some stairs. When Corduroy got to the top step, the big curtain went up and up and up. Corduroy was so startled that he lost his balance and tumbled into the orchestra pit. He looked round at all the musicians and thought, "Well, this is a good spot to hear the music, but now I can't see the stage." And so what do you think he did? At the back of the orchestra, there was a tall set of columns. "Maybe if I sat up there, I could have a better view," he thought. Quietly, he crawled through the orchestra, past feet and instrument cases, and around the music stands towards the drums. "How did you get here, little fellow?" the drummer whispered to Corduroy. "You must be a prop from the play. Someone will be looking for you." So he put Corduroy up on the ledge behind the drums. There was a chair off to one side behind the curtain. "I could see better from there," thought Corduroy. But before he got to the chair, a stagehand tripped on him. "Sorry, bear," said the stagehand. He put Corduroy on the table with the other props. The table was hard, not like Lisa's soft seat in the theater. Backstage was very busy. Actors were coming and going, changing costumes and getting their props. One actor almost grabbed Corduroy. "I should find a safer spot, he decided, and he hid between the costumes. "This is safe," he thought, "but I'll never see anything from here." There's a tree with a basket in his branches, off to one side. "I should be able to see from here," Corduroy thought, and he climbed up the tree and into the basket. "Well," thought Corduroy, "now this is more like it. Not too high, not too low. This is just right." And he settled in and watched Mother Goose performance. "I love the theater," said Corduroy. He was really enjoying the show. After a number of different things, the manager called out, "Final scene, everyone. Take your places." Stagehands quickly moved new scenery onto the stage while the actors went to stand in position. Suddenly, Corduroy's tree began moving right onto the stage. And then it started to grow. Up, up, up went the tree, the basket, and Corduroy. He was on stage in the tree. "Now this is a very tall tree," said Corduroy, as he looked down at the stage far below. The tall tree made him think of the tall man who had sat in front of Lisa. Corduroy wondered, "How will I get back to Lisa if I'm up in this tree?" On the stage below, Mother Goose started to sing, "Rock-a-bye baby on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock." Offstage, a fan blew air into the branches of the tree. The cradle began to rock back and forth, up and down, back and forth, and up and down, and Corduroy was getting dizzy. He held on to the sides of the cradle as it rocked faster and faster. Before Corduroy knew what was happening, Mother Goose scooped him up for the curtain call. The audience clapped as the actors bowed. Corduroy bowed, too. After the curtain call, the cast took Corduroy backstage to the dressing room. "Who does this bear belong to?" they wondered. The usher brought Lisa backstage. "Corduroy, there you are," said Lisa. "How did you get on stage?" "I couldn't see, and I wanted to get a little closer," said Corduroy. "Oh, Corduroy," said Lisa, "you certainly did get closer, didn't you?" The very next day, Lisa made a theater in her room just for Corduroy. It was a little stage and had a little house in the back of it, little curtains along the side, and there were two flashlights, one on each side of this little stage in a box. It was sort of like a box, an open box, for the lights onto the stage, and she did a little play for him with a doll of hers. Meanwhile, she had set all her toys and animals out on the mat, looking at the stage, and Corduroy got to be in the rocking chair. He could see everything from this nice, safe spot. Now, we have time for one more, I think, and it's called The Kangaroo. The Kangaroo. If I Were a Kangaroo, it's called A Bedtime Tale. So it's about bedrooms and sleep. And I don't think we're going to have time to finish it, but let's give it a try. "If I were a kangaroo, I'd pick you up and carry you in my pocket, sleepyhead, and hop you gently off to bed." And unfortunately, we run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For more information about NCRS, visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Read to Succeed on the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.